20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. I am super pumped up because I get to talk to a guest that I've been wanting to have on for a very long time, and it worked out today. We're going to talk a lot about Jonathan Gannon, the Cardinals defense, philosophy, schemes, everything that you could possibly imagine. He is Cody Alexander. You can find him at matchquarters.com. Let's Talk Ball podcast and on social media at @the_coach_A. He is awesome at breaking down all things NFL film. Make sure to give him a follow. Cody, I cannot thank you enough for coming on. How are you doing, my friend?
Yeah, doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you bet. I want to start, obviously, the main thing that we're going to be talking about today is Jonathan Gannon, what he can bring to Green Bay, what you've seen on tape from him already. But before we get there, I just want to get your sort of overarching thoughts on Green Bay's defense, Jeff Hafley, where this defense stands as is, Micah Parsons coming off of injury. What you've seen from kind of Jeff Hafley in this Packers defense over the last couple of years and where you would kind of like to see them either head or continue to go in a direction?
Yeah, I was really excited with, one, the Hafley hire. It really goes in, like, LaFleur and Saleh are pretty close. I think people know that. Hafley has kind of, in a roundabout way, he was there during that transition from Saleh to what the defense he's running now to what it was that Carroll Legion of Boom style before. So he's been part of that transition. I think a little people had a lot of pause because it was like, well, they ran a lot of man at Boston College. Like, they were doing some things up front. It was mostly a four down. Like, what is that necessarily going to lead into here? I think what we've seen is high simulated pressure usage, a lot of Tampa 2. He wants to have that matchup, whether it's cover 3 or 1, but then flip to a Tampa 2, which is that's traditionally how you're going to match it. If you're heavy match in closed post, you're going to use Tampa 2 kind of in that as that change up. Now, not a lot of pressure. I think a lot, you know, and I've talked about this before with, like, the Packers. Like, Micah Parsons is great and he's a game wrecker, don't get me wrong, but the defense was already kind of middle of the road anyway. It wasn't like it was, and it wasn't the year before. So this isn't like an elite defense. Now, that being said, I do feel like there's ways that you can maximize it. I think if you fix the corner room, the safety room to me is super diverse, which is interesting because you're bringing in Jonathan Gannon, played pretty much with three safeties on the field for much of the time when he was at Arizona. I don't think that's what they're going to do, and we'll get into this, I'm sure. But what I think, just in terms, is this is a team, this is a defense that is already kind of in the middle of the pack that needs kind of a couple of pieces here or there. Micah Parsons obviously being healthy to raise into that top 10 to kind of match the efficiency of the offense.
Well, that's certainly what we're going to be hoping for as we make this transition to Jonathan Gannon. As you looked at, you know, as Jeff Hafley gets the job in Miami and he takes the head coaching job there, there's a lot of different names that pop up, from Jim Leonard in Denver, DeJounte Jones in Minnesota, their passing game coordinator. There's other, you know, Brian Flores, of course, is one that is a free agent and it's kind of the pie in the sky. But kind of the thinking, of course, was that he was going to end up back in Minnesota, which he did. Maybe a Jim Schwartz comes available. There's been a lot of other defensive coordinators that have kind of moved around. Denard Wilson just got the job in New York. Where would you have seen Jonathan Gannon sort of on this spectrum of open defensive coordinator candidates that Green Bay potentially could have hired going into the offseason?
I think the one place where people put pause with Gannon is really just the run fits, right? Stopping the run. That was one of the things that they had problems with the Eagles. They had constantly had problems with fitting the run with in Cardinals, but that was more, I think, a lot more players over plays. Yep. They went out and bought a bunch of players this year, and they were really good for their standard. They were in that top quadrant when you look at, like, EPA run versus pass. They were in that top quadrant. They were in that, you know, above average NFL defense. And then they had just so many injuries in the secondary. Everything kind of fell apart. We had the whole quarterback saga with Kyler. I think he can have a renaissance, much like Staley has had with New Orleans. I think people probably, you're like, why are you bringing up New Orleans? The last 9 weeks of the season, New Orleans was a top 5 defense.
Yep.
Again, You probably don't notice that. I'm a nerd. I do. I know stuff like
that. No, they were really good.
They were really good. And I think the hope is that he can have some sort of a ring. Hey, you don't have to put a lot of the weight on being a head coach. That's going to go to LaFleur. I think he can go in. So in terms of, to answer your question, where do I think that he stood? I think he was higher up in a lot of candidates than you would think. Look, Denard Wilson's going to the Giants because I think I probably Harbaugh had it all over again. He probably would have thrown some money at Denard Wilson. You know, I think that was kind of the deal with that. Instead of going with Zach Orr, you probably throw money at Denard Wilson or Anthony Weaver, and you try and keep one of those guys there. So I'm not surprised with that. Flores, like you said, was kind of always pie in the sky. Schwartz was never going to leave the Browns. Why would you ever let him leave? That roster is perfectly fit for what he's doing. So I think, like, this is actually a relatively good hire. I don't think that this is a bad hire at all.
Love to hear that. So now is the time that I'm super excited about, because Cody, the floor is yours. You can nerd out as much as you want. I know you've done a ton of film review, film study on Jonathan Gannon, this Cardinals defense, and what he's kind of done in this league. So you can go in any direction that you want, tendencies, what to expect. The floor is yours, my friend. Nerd out as much as you want.
Yeah, so this is a defense that has a lot of diversity. They have one of the higher diversity scores in the NFL in terms of what are their blitz structures like, what are their coverage structures like, and then their personnel usage. They're all over the map. They use things, you know, they're really not, they're weird because they were about 35% base, they were about 45% nickel, and then they were 16% dime. So that dime usage is really high. That base usage is really high, which pulls away from that nickel. Why were they like that? They were like that because they had three really good safeties, and that's what they wanted to do. He created what I call a build a 3-4 defense. So it was a 3-4 base, but they would get to a 3-4 post-snap by moving Buda Baker all over the place. So Buda Baker's all-pro safety. He's basically a Wolverine on a football field. He runs around. He's great at blitzing. They would blitz him everywhere. They would use him as a kind of the de facto will linebacker, essentially. A lot of times him moving him weak. They would line up in a three high shell, look very collegiate. I thought, and look, I have to give kudos to him. And I've said this before, like, this is the NFL, and it's pretty black and white a lot of the times. Like, we either do this or we do this. And even like with the Fangio adjacent crew and the Ravens with McDonald and Mentor, they're still running pretty standard defenses. It's just the way that, oh, we're doing everything out of too high, or our coverage diversity is a lot different than a lot of people. And I think with Gannon, it was like, we don't have any players. What can we do? And he kind of went the opposite of what Flores did. Flores like, we don't have anybody in the secondary. We're going to load up everybody in every gap, and then we're just going to blitz you. And then you're going to have to throw the ball really quick, and then guess what? We're going to tackle you. And then that's just how we're going to survive. Some teams got really good at playing against it, like Ben Johnson, and then some teams just couldn't figure it out, right? Like Panthers. They just kept throwing screens, which is exactly what they want them to throw. Andrew Van Ginkle's running for touchdowns, right? So you have that. I think with him, it was like, look, where are we really strong? We're really strong at the defensive backfield. Their corners were actually not that bad. So a lot of this has to do with structure. So if you're looking at how does this project to the Packers have a relatively deep safety room with Bullard and then Oladipo, who is kind of this like big nickel, like kind of like an Eamon Worry kind of guy, like that. We really want him to play that big dime, right? You can do so. You have four safeties that can really do some things. I think the corners are going to have to get. You need some corners. Keyshawn Nixon is good, not great. Who's going to play opposite him? I think Nate Hobbs was a little bit disappointing this year. Valentine is again good, not great. When he plays, sometimes when he doesn't play a lot, he looks great. Then when he plays a lot, you're like, oh yeah, that's right. That's why you're a back. Kind of like how Jarrett Stidham looked like a backup. Yeah, to Bo Nix, like, oh, he looks good in a couple plays, and then you're like, oh, you threw that interception, and that's exactly why you're a backup. So, you know, you have situations like that, and I think he is also, when you look at what they were doing in Philly, because I think that's really more of the basis. This was a quarters-based structure that was using a lot of the five-man fronts, was using a lot of the wide nine stuff, which should already be familiar with Packers fans because that's what Halfley ran. It's bouncing around from different packages, but having a quarters base, playing a lot of match three in the backside, it looks kind of like Fangio, but more quarters than anything else.
We'll be right back. Hey friends, the big game is almost here, and there's no better way to cash in during America's biggest sporting event than Prize Picks, where it always feels good to be right. And since the big game is right around the corner, it also means that it's your last chance to get into the football action before next season. So close the season out with Prize Picks by getting $50 instantly in lineups when you play your first $5 lineup. Now, we've been talking about Prize Picks all season long, and what I've really enjoyed are the stories from fans who've played Daily Fantasy for the first time, who've won a big pick, and who've told me how much they enjoy playing Prize Picks. Now, I've heard some awesome winning stories all season long, and you still have time to get in this football season to get some big wins with Prize Picks. Now, with Prize Picks, you don't need to wait until next year's fantasy draft to keep playing fantasy. Prize Picks lets you play fantasy football every week, even in the playoffs. Pick your favorite players and win when they hit their projections every week, no draft required. So join millions of users and sign up for America's number one sports app, Prize Picks. And right now, you can download the Prize Picks app and use code Packaday to get $50 in lineups when you play your first $5 lineup. That's code Packaday to get $50 in lineups when you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. I have an impossible question to ask you. So, and maybe it's not, but as he makes this transition into Green Bay, I know he's done some 3-4 stuff. I think in Philly, he did some 4-3 stuff. Not sure how much it ultimately matters at the end of the day. Like you said, he did play more base in Arizona. With what Green Bay has right now, would you expect him to kind of take some of the stuff that Jeff Hafley's already implemented, maybe keep it a little bit more, you know, simplistic, meaning stay with the 4-3 and maybe not make too many changes? Or would you expect him, based on maybe personnel and what he's done in previous stints, that he would change this up, maybe go to a 3-4 and maybe move some of this stuff around a little bit more?
Yeah, I don't see like McDuffie. I think it's probably jettisoned, right? I think you move on from him. I know you brought him back because that's what Hafley wanted, to play a lot of base. He was kind of that, I call it a Ted linebacker, right? The tight end, old school Ted, line up on the tight end, same old school, same linebacker, you know, just what you do in a 4-3. I think you probably move on from that just because he doesn't add anything in pass rush. He's not like a Derek Barnes. He's not like some of these other guys, like a Luvu, Jihad Campbell, like you have with the Eagles, Bond with the Eagles, that can kind of walk down and give you a little bit of kind of an oomph on the edge. So I think, like, to me, probably you lean into the 3-4. I also think too, like, you're set up for it really to do it. I think you get, you know, Vanesse, I think, can easily bump in and play some big five technique, or bump in and play some 4-eye every once in a while, just because he's kind of that big, powerful guy. So I think, like, you have the structure there. You probably need to go out and get another edge, probably in the draft. Maybe you find somebody in free agency you feel like you hit. Maybe you bring one of the guys, like a Zaven Collins or a Browning, just to kind of be a bridge to hold over from the Cardinals. Maybe that's something that you do. But no, I think that this turns into a 3-4. Saying that, though, when you go to nickel, it's going to be a 4-down and it's going to be 1-9. So it's play both.
That's what I say. It's always like an interesting conversation because, you know, at the end of the day, it's mostly a nickel league and you're all doing a lot of the same stuff, but there is definitely some nuance to it. And I am interested to see just how he kind of does that. I think probably one thing that Packers fans are going to want to know, specifically kind of their three key players, I think what most people would define it as: Micah Parsons, Edgerrin Cooper, Xavier McKinney. How do these three players specifically fit within maybe a Jonathan Gannon style defense?
Well, I think Xavier McKinney should be really excited. He's going to move around a ton. That stuff is not going to disappear. I mean, I even remember Gannon was doing like safety blitzes, like simulated pressures. So basically showing safety down and then rolling to too high, but we're sending safety on a blitz. We're moving him down, but then shifting him over in a different spot. So I think that letting him kind of that ball hawking ability and letting him move around, putting him in the post, this is still going to be a cover three heavy defense, putting him in the post and let him kind of be that center field safety, I think is still going to be there. I think with Cooper, it's really just going to be where can you add value to us? Is it that kind of walk down Will linebacker in our nickel to get into some of these five man fronts, which he ran a ton of penny, which is 5-1, to get into these looks, like these 50 looks? You know, will you walk down? You're athletic enough that if we need to peel you on a running back, you can do that. Like, I think too, like getting Quay Walker essentially just an A gap player is what you need to do, is get him where he only has to worry about the A gap. He's your inside blitzer. And then Micah Parsons, to me, again, coming from more of an odd front setting, you're going to protect him a lot of times by getting a three technique to his side, covering the guard, maybe covering the tackle, letting him kind of move around. Obviously, with the blitz package stuff, I think you can find ways to move him around. So if there's something that you steal from Halfley, and what I think is interesting is like Halfley stole from himself. Like Quay Walker was essentially doing all of the inside pressure stuff. And then Micah came along and they're like, oh yeah, we'll just put you on top of the center. That's a lot better. Like we're probably going to win that more than putting Walker there. And so that kind of deal. And what was the, you know, cause I've talked to several Packers people too, once he got hurt, it's like, what's that going to look like? Well, you're just going to go back to your old ways and you're going to go back to the 2024 playbook. That's exactly what you did. So I think that there is some signal there too, of like looking about, what can we do pressure building wise where we can move him into certain spots to where we feel like we can give him some advantageous things? Because this is a defense, and I'll be honest with you, is not, it's a below average blitz rate and a below average stunt rate. So they're not necessarily trying to move around, but I do think with a guy like Micah, it changes the way that you do some things, but you can structurally, you can help him out on a down to down basis.
You mentioned the potential of maybe, you know, McDuffie doesn't fit quite as well. And you just mentioned Quay Walker again. Quay is an unrestricted free agent for Green Bay. Do you think bringing in a Jonathan Gannon here makes it more likely that they would want to be aggressive in bringing Quay back? Or do you think with maybe having Tyron Hopper and Edgerrin Cooper could be enough at that spot? If you were putting your Packers GM hat on for a second, would you be more or less likely to bring Quay back based on this move?
I would bring him back. I think linebackers a lot of times get paid like running backs, like especially like, okay, he's not an all pro, so we don't have to, we're not, you know, I don't need to pay him like I'm paying Fred Warner. You know, I think you bring him in if you kind of just say, we'll match whatever your offer is. And then here's our line in the sand. If it goes above that, it's like, hey, we're fine. We can find somebody else. I think, look, you can find somebody that's been in one of these Fangio adjacent systems. I mean, look at what the Rams were able to do with Landman. So like you can find a guy for cheap that's been around the system. I mean, I even think the Panthers with Roseboom, think staying in that like Fangio tree of like, hey, we found a guy that was adequate for what we needed in that sense. He's not going to add, he's not going to go. Cause you have a guy in Cooper that I think a lot of people feel like can become an all-star, that can become a really good player. Like I see him almost as like a guy that can, he enhances your blitz. He's really good at coverage. He's kind of like that complete linebacker. So we just need a guy that can sit in the A gap. Can you do that? And I think Quay Walker has proven, hey, I can blitz that A gap. I can handle that situation. I can do that. I'm not going to give you, you know, my ceiling's not going to be super high, but my floor is not going to be super low. And I'm going to, you know, and I think I'm right there where we are. So I do think that with him, you probably say, well, mash whatever it is up to this point. If it goes beyond that, then good luck.
I'm sure you've brought a couple of these things up already, but if you were a Packers fan, what would you be most excited about Jonathan Gannon coming to Green Bay?
I think you're going to get a proven defensive coordinator. I mean, the secondaries under him have played really well. And look, you're getting no pressure at all in Arizona, and you were able to have a decent secondary, especially like when you look at it as a whole without the injuries. The first half of the season, secondary's playing well. You know, I think that there were signals that things were moving in the right direction. When he was with the Eagles, that secondary was playing really well. They played a lot of cover one. They played a lot of quarters, which tends to be the two that get paired together a lot of times because it's very match heavy. Quarters is essentially main with rules, to be honest with you. So I think you're going to get that. I think the secondary can get fixed in a sense of just like the consistency. And here's the deal. It's not like it was that far off. I think there was a point in time, I even did a video on it, of that the blitz coverage for the Packers was like at a historic level. I mean, it was like 1 yard was the average, you know, throw for the blitz. It kind of tailed off, especially when Micah got hurt and you kind of get into the meat of the schedule, injuries and all that stuff. But I don't think it's that far off. And this is something that's been solid with the back end. And I think that you can find ways to get right in the front end just with the players that you have.
I love that. If on the opposite side, again, if you were a Packers fan, what would you be a little bit hesitant or, you know, have some trepidation about?
Yeah, it's not the sexiest hire because you are looking at a team. I think a lot of times too, when you're a fan, you box score watch around the league, and so you don't really know like what's going on. I'm an absolute nerd. I've watched this defense. I think what they were doing was really unique. It was really cool. Obviously, sometimes cool stuff doesn't work, and they tried to double down and really get him a lot of players this year on defense. Injury bug hit. He ended up not being very good. Quarterback situation doesn't work out. He's out of a job. I think, too, some of the Packers, you start looking, okay, who is Jonathan Gannon? He's had some awkward interactions, online. But I'll just tell you, too, like a lot of these guys, like this is the, you know, when the camera's around or just in terms of what they're doing, they look awkward. They're a bunch of coaches. They're grown boys that have never been anywhere else. They've sat in dark rooms for way too long. And so I think like that's probably something, but in terms of like schematics, what can I worry about? There is going to be a little bit of a transition. This is not going to be a four down front. Just that's all we do. Right. So there is going to be some growing pains on that. The back end is going to have to get fixed. I think the safety room's good. I think the corner room needs to get a little bit better. That's been kind of since Jair Alexander kind of fell off the cliff. That's kind of what it's always been. It's like Keyshawn Nixon, we want him to be like an all-star, but we don't really know. He has games where he looks really good, but then he doesn't. We don't know who's going to be opposite him in that sense. And so I think that's a room that needs to get cleaned up. It worries me a little bit too, because again, that's not something that you just fix overnight. You're not going to get, you know, unless you draft a first round corner and it hits, that's great. But typically where the Packers are drafting, it's going to end up being safeties are going to be sitting there. Well, yeah, we got plenty of the safeties. So I just think that you need to add an edge. The D line is a little bit kind of on the below average side of production. And to be honest with you, with Gannon, in you saw a lack of run structures. They weren't really good. Even when they went to the Super Bowl, that was always the big thing. It's like, well, Kansas City's going to be able to run on them. Well, they ended up playing Kansas City that, you know, doesn't really like to run the ball. They got beat because they played too much cover one. So it wasn't that the run was there. And I think, too, in the modern day, if you're really looking at it, 5 years ago, that probably wasn't that big of a deal. I think now with more 12 personnel, 13 personnel, especially with what the Bears are trying to do with their run game, the Lions aren't going to change at all with their run game. So you start looking at you kind of looking around. The Vikings are a big 21 personnel team. They want to run the ball, too, especially with a young quarterback that they don't really know if it was any good. So it's like, you look at your league and you're like, yeah, okay, we got to be able to stop the run. So those would be the things that I would be concerned at, and mostly up front and getting that fixed.
Yeah, might need to add a little beef up there, and that'll be something that's interesting to take a look at this offseason. Unfortunately, Green Bay's first round pick is firmly in the hands of the Dallas Cowboys due to the Micah Parsons trade. So even less likely they can find one of those top corners in the draft. I shouldn't say unfortunately. Fortunately, it's in Dallas because of the Micah Parsons trade, but you get my point. With no horse in the race, as you fire up tape from game one, Packers versus whoever, with Jonathan Gannon as defensive coordinator, what are you going to be most excited, or like what's the first thing that you're going to go to on the tape to see, like, huh, I wonder how this is working, or that you're just intrigued by the most?
I think the cover structure. This was one of the best quarters teams in the league when you look at it, just in terms of what he was able to do with the Eagles. They ran a lot of quarters. It was actually relatively pretty good when he was with the Cardinals. So a lot of these four high structures, these two high structures that, you know, everybody's kind of talking about right now. And we look into these teams that we're seeing in the Super Bowl, especially with like Seattle. They want to play, you know, pretty much a 50-50 mix between split field and single high. And that's kind of what Gannon wants to do as well. He wants to play everything from a two high shell. That's where that Fangio adjacent thing comes in. If you're looking there and you're like, well, he's not a Fangio guy. They were trying to run the Fangio system. And Fangio was actually his consultant during that year that they went to the Super Bowl. And yes, he's got some other things like the Tampa 2 stuff from Eberflus and some other stuff that he's been around. I think that you see where he's kind of become more of a quarters guy. That's what I'm really going to look at. And then I also am going to look at that safety room. When you get into a passing down or you get into an 11 personnel team, you know, how are they going to structure that? How are they going to use McKinney? Those are the things that secondary to me is where I'm going to be really, really focused.
You can give this a letter grade, or you can evaluate it in any way that you want. As we sit here today recording on January 26th, how would you overall evaluate the Packers hire of Jonathan Gannon?
I mean, I would say it's probably a B+. I wouldn't say it's an A, home run. Look, because there are so many questions that are coming from this. I think I look at him as almost like a Staley of where, man, Staley was like that. That defense was rolling and they were doing some really good stuff. And then he went to the Chargers. It just didn't work out. Right. Gannon was like, okay, there were questions when he left, questions when he's at the Cardinals. Now I've got a little bit of questions with him coming back, but I still think the scheme that he runs works. I think he's creative. He's young. He's going to kind of connect with those guys and get them where they're supposed to be. The coverage structures were always really good wherever he was. So that, to me, in the modern game, that's where I think. But in terms of, is it a home run? Probably not. It gives you a head coach on the sideline. He's probably learned some lessons. I'm interested to see how he meshes with it. So I'd probably give it like a B to a B plus.
Does the failure in Arizona as a head coach mean anything, or is it just one of these coaches that is a great coordinator but maybe just wasn't made out to be a head coach? We'll be right back.
Arizona's a weird place. I think if you do a little digging, you find out it's really one of the poorer ownerships in the league. It's one of the old families, so they don't really have that cash capital. I mean, that's one of the reasons why Davis went out and got some investment, was just so they have an influx of cash so they can actually start paying some of these players. You know, some of the funny money stuff that a lot of these people are doing with like dead cap and void years and all that stuff. I think it's hard to win there because you just don't know. Kyler Murray doesn't really help you out too. They really didn't have defensive players. They kind of half did it in 24. And then this year, this offseason, they're like, okay, we'll go get you. You know, they tried to get Milton Williams. I thought he was going to go there. That was going to be awesome. They didn't. Then they got the Walter Nolan, but then he was hurt. And so, like, they had some things and pieces that I think were there. But, no, I wouldn't necessarily fail. And here's the other thing. He's a proven coordinator. He's been good. He's a Super Bowl coordinator. And, it's kind of like Spagnuolo. Spagnuolo went and was a head coach, wasn't great. I think Aaron Glenn's probably going to have the same situation. A lot of times it depends on the organization that you go to and whether it's going to be successful. And then ultimately, do you have the quarterback? And I think the Packers have the quarterback. The Cardinals don't have the quarterback. And I think that was evident. And that typically is what's going to kill a coach.
Is there anything that I didn't ask you about Jonathan Gannon that you've got rolling around in that head of yours that you'd like to go over, get off your chest, et cetera? Or do we cover pretty much everything?
No, I think we covered everything because, we can sit here and speculate. I mean, he could come out and just say, we're going to play a bunch of nickel. And then they're going to a bunch of four down and he just keeps that wide nine structure. I think we can have more answers. Look, I'll say this. The free agency period is going to be really telling. Who they let go, who they bring in, that's going to tell you a lot about that structure. So I do think that it is going to be a base 3-4. I think that the secondary is going to play really well. You're going to see a lot more quarters, less Tampa 2. I think you're going to see a lot more five-man front structures than you did with Halfley. The simulated pressures and some of the stuff like that I think are going to be a little bit lower than what you typically saw with Halfley. So that to me is you're going to be pretty much below average in terms of blitz rate and things like that. But hopefully with Micah Parsons and some of that front structure, your pressure rate moves up, which again helps that secondary.
All right, I have one last one for you that probably takes a little bit more nuance, but I'm going to dumb down the question just because is this going to be, would you define this as more of a bend but don't break defense with Jonathan Gannon, or is there a little bit more to it than that?
Yeah, I mean, that's really what it is. I think the better term for it is like a mitigating defense of like, we're just kind of bend don't break kind of gets, I mean, everything. If you see a too high shell, it's bend don't break, right? Yeah. So it's like, that's not really how it works, but I think it's more of a mitigating defense. Again, it's not a high blitz rate. I think the Packer, like to look at it this way, like Halfley was pretty much all league average, like league average blitz rate, league average stunt rate, league average this. So it's just kind of like he was part of the NFL meta, right? I think Gannon is kind of in line of that, of like, hey, we're really going to play we're going to cap on everything, play everything from a too high shell. We're not going to give you a lot of space. We're going to we're going to take the gamble that you'll run the ball a little bit more, but we'll be able to stop it just through some structures, maybe some timely blitzes on early down, but we're not going to get in our way. We're going to make you drive the ball, which again, that tends to be termed bend don't break. But like you said, there's nuance to it and there's choices that you have to have for that. I think at the end of the day, they want to be a 50-50 split middle of the field open, middle of the field close. So close post, split field, however you want to put that. And give you a – the picture needs to be the same every single time you put the tape on first and second down. You don't want – that. We don't want you to know what we're going to do. Make the quarterback process do everything in second down. So, yeah, there's more nuance to it. I call it a mitigating defense. You want to muddy the waters, especially against play action. When that quarterback turns the ball to hand the ball off to run – fake the hand the ball off to running back, turns back around. He has to recompute everything. That's hopefully where the Micah Parsons can really come in, especially on early downs.
And most importantly, Patriots or Seahawks, who you got?
Seahawks. I think it's going to be really difficult for them. I think if Bo Nix plays in that Denver game, it's not even close. There's a lot of plays that you're just like, yeah, if Bo Nix is playing, it's a first down, or he throws that ball. I think everybody's focusing on the fourth down play. Nobody's focusing on the Mims screen that he threw a 90-mile-an-hour fastball to him. It was a touchdown. So yeah. I'm a Broncos fan, so I'm crying right now.
I didn't mean to bring up anything. It is a brutal game when you can have that sort of season and then you celebrate in the divisional round that you're going to the AFC Championship. You've got a home game against New England, and in that moment, you find out that your quarterback is done for the year. You know, the Packers had a lot of injuries this year that derailed their season, but getting to that point, and then again, probably that's brutal. Excruciating. I feel for you. I did not know you
were like on the second to the last play. Yeah, to the second to the last play too. Oh no, man. I'm a fan, not a fanatic. It's just funny that we're talking about it, because it's just like, yeah, I'm rehashing it all week.
It's a cruel league, cruel league.
Yep.
Cody, I cannot thank you enough. Thank you so much for taking the time. This is awesome. Everything I could have wanted and more. Where can we find all of your incredible work?
Yeah, matchquarters.com is the best place to start. So if you like defense at all, I've got everything there, either matchquarters.com or the matchquarters YouTube channel. So if you want to start, hey, I just want to start out with the free stuff first. Let me see what you got. Go to that and then go to matchquarters.com for everything else.
Do yourself a favor. Do more than that. Subscribe. He's awesome. You're going to learn a ton. Follow him on social media at the_coach_a. My apologies.
No, it's difficult. It's my fault. It's okay.
It's all good. Go give him a follow. Subscribe to his stuff. Cody, I cannot thank you enough. We'll do this again at some point in time, hopefully. Follow him. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for us. But until next time, and as always, go Packo.